I just want to get to know your names because I don't know everyone. Batya is here. Ariella Hollander. Okay. Ahuva Gold. Okay. Aviva. I can't read the last name. Oh, it's Farkas. Oh. Okay. Tova Nadler. Okay. Alyssa Offman. Okay. Hi. Joyce Tessel. Okay. Naomi Levin. Okay. Tamar Katz. Okay. And Fran. Anyone that I didn't. Okay. All right. So let's see what we can accomplish. The problem is we don't have so much time, and there's a lot to do. And we maybe you can think about, if you've never learned before about, which is a really very interesting, and it takes quite a bit of time to get through it, as far as how to blow the shofar, how to make the sounds, what kind of sounds. It's very interesting. But that's in the fourth parak. What we're starting on in the third parak is more about the instrument itself of the shofar, as you're learning now, from which animal is it supposed to come from, as we keep going, is what if the shofar is damaged? Let's say it has a hole in it. Is there a way to repair it? So the Gemara is working on the instrument itself, not how to blow it. The fourth parak talks about how to blow it. Maybe let's just talk right now. Anybody have a preference? Because we could continue to work on the third parak. I don't know how much, it depends how long it's going to take us. I don't know if we'll actually get to how to sound the shofar, which is, it is very interesting. And if you never learned it before, there are a lot of surprises that you'll discover. Think about it, okay? And you can let me know. All right, let's see. Did anybody get to Chavav Amud Beis, the Mishnah on Chavav Amud Beis? That's okay. I just want to know. Did you all get into the Ramban? Okay. What did you find strange about this Gemara on Chavav Amud Aleph? Anything? Something that sounds very unusual. The Gemara spends quite a bit of time on doing something which, at first glance, you don't know what's going on. Yeah?
Of giving a reason for something that we seem to already have a reason for?
Yeah. Well, why is the Gemara giving us reasons, additional reasons, than what we have in the Mishnah? Basically, who asked this Kasha?
The Ramban.
The Ramban did. All of a sudden, the Gemara is, and actually it turned out that how many reasons? One, two. I think it was two. Two additional reasons the Gemara came up with to explain why the Tanakhama says that Chutz Mishal Para. So what did the Ramban, just very quickly, what did the Ramban basically answer? So why is the Gemara doing it? Yeah? Yeah, the Ramban says that the Gemara felt that the reason that the Tanakhama gave in the Mishnah, what reason was given? Because Meshuhu Karen. That seemed to be not such a strong reason, and you'll tell me in a second why it's not so strong. So therefore, the Gemara almost felt compelled to come up, there's got to be more than this, just this, because this, to the Gemara, seemed to be a weak reason. So you have Amorayim. Who was it in the Gemara that did this? It was Ula, I think.
And Abai.
These are Amorayim. So they're coming up on their own with reasons. Because they didn't think that the reason of the Mishnah was such a good reason. Why did they think that the Mishnah, what's wrong with the reason of the Mishnah? What is wrong with it? What's wrong with it? I think the Ramban pointed that out too. What's wrong? I mean, Tanakhama said because a par is called Karen. Well, What did Rabbi Yose say? What did Rabbi Yose say about a para?
It's also called a shofar.
Yeah. But what else did he say? Exactly. What did Rabbi Yose say back to the Chachamim? Remember the Gemara. What did the Rabbi Yose say? Halo koha shofros nikru karen. Right. That was what Rabbi Yose said right away in the Mishnah. All shofros are called karen. What are you so upset about the word karen? Right. What's so terrible? Every shofar is called a karen, and he quotes the pasuk to prove it. B'mshoch b'karen hayovel. So of course the Chachamim's response was, what? That's why the Gemara right away said, Shapir koma Rabbi Yose, that Rabbi Yose had a very good point. So what did the Chachamim respond? Well, that's true, a shofar is called a karen, but the horn of a para is only called what? A karen, and it's not called a shofar. That was the weakness that the Amoraim thought existed. Because if every shofar is called a Karen, what makes you think that the word Karen, you know, is a mum, is a blemish in the kashrus of a shofar? What's so terrible? And as it turns out from the Gemara, the way Ula and Abaye present it, how did the Gemara do it? Did the Gemara, when Ula said, one reason is because it's called a Karen, and then another reason is the reasons that they came up with, which we'll discuss. The Gemara did it the other way around. It's interesting. Ula says, the reason is X. And also, in addition to that, there's what other reason? Because it's called a Karen. It's almost as if the second reason is just some additional thing and doesn't seem to be the main, at least the way the Gemara presents it. The Ramban introduced the word, which is an important sniffin, a sniff. You saw that word? That means when one reason is given and it's just not enough, they'll give more reasons. A sniff is something to add on to it, an additional reason, because the first reason wasn't good enough. All right. So the Gemara at first... So how did the Chachamim respond to Rabbi Yose? When Rabbi Yose said, but every shofar is called a Karen. So, again, the Rabbanon's response is, as we said, that a shofar is, that it's called shofar and Karen, but shalpara is only called a Karen. Okay. And what did Rabbi Yose say back? And Rabbi Yose said that a para is also called a shofar. Interesting, it's not that Rabbi Yose says, who cares? Rabbi Yose says that what? That a horn of a para is also called shofar. And then there was a debate about what would be the source of that, right? Rabbi Yose quoted the pasuk, v'sitav lecha mishor par. The question is, how to be dorish the words mishor par? Do you all understand that? Rabbi Yose looked at it one way, the Chachamim came back. So when you finish it, what's the machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yose? The machlokas is whether the horn of a para, isn't that right, is called a shofar. Because they both seem to agree that if I could find the horn of an animal and it's only called a keren, then they would both agree that it should be pasul. Isn't that right? So what's the debate about a para? The debate is whether the horn of a para is called a shofar or not. Rabbi Yossi says it is, and therefore it's kosher. And the Chacham and the Tanakhama says it's not. It's only called a Karen. So somehow this word Karen is a pasulus. Why should the word... I'm asking Stanley, what is the tragedy if it's called... A Karen is a horn. What are we talking... We're talking about a horn of an animal. What else are we talking about? Why should the word Karen convey pasulus? Anybody have an answer? Well, from anything that you've learned.
You said there's a biological difference between a
Yeah, and what is that?
That the Karen is one unit, like one bone, but the shofar is like some external shell filled up with something else that you move.
Yeah. This to me was a very, very important point, that the Ramban says it's not so much the word Karen. Like somehow the word Karen is a dirty word. There's nothing wrong with the word Karen. It's what the word conveys. Usually if you're just going to describe the horn of an animal as a Karen, that word usually describes a horn that's a solid bone. It's a solid bone, or bone material. And if you removed it from the animal, you couldn't blow anything on it. You'd have to bore a hole through it if you wanted to blow, make a sound from it. But it's just a solid bone. That's what a Karen is. While a shofar is not a solid bone. A shofar has a shell, and there happens to be a bone that runs through it. Do you know, what was the word? A zachrus. That was a bone that runs through it, which when you want to use it for a shofar, you remove the bone. That's what's usually done. And of course, then you have the hollow space inside. But it's basically you have a shell with a bone through it. So according to the Ramban, what is the definition of a shofar? And I don't mean now the word necessarily talking about a ram or anything like that. The definition of a shofar is a horn that is hollow. That it's naturally hollow. I say naturally because the bone, yeah, there's a bone that grows in it that you could take out. But basically you have a hollow horn. That's the definition of a shofar. The definition of a Karen is a solid bone. So what was the horn of a paro like? Was it a solid bone or was it a shell with a bone through it? It was a shell with a bone through it. In Mitzius, that's what it was. So why then is it possible according to the Tanakhama? See, actually the Ramban had to say, now the Lashon of the Mishnah was Mipnei Shehu Karen. What's difficult about the language? What's difficult? Yeah? Yeah, what do you mean? It's not a Karen. Neshu Karen. It's not a Karen. Because the word Karen means a solid bone. So how did the Ramban interpret it? When it says, yes, Neshu Karen. Okay, just answer this and then I'll let you ask the question. So what does Neshu Karen then mean? Not that it is a Karen. You have to say what it means what? It's called a Karen. So what does it mean to be called a Karen? That for some reason, the horn of a para is given the status as though it's like a Karen, as though it were a solid bone. And that's the whole point, that the fact that the Chacham and the Tanakhama points out that we find that the word a par, the horn of a par is only called a Karen, even though we know it's not a solid bone. So what the Pasuk is trying to teach us then is that we are to treat it like a Karen. And that's the Pasulus. Yes?
I just thought that Karen was a more general, if both shofars are called Karen, then how can we say that the meaning of the word Karen is a solid bone?
Okay. It's a good point. She's right. She has a good kasha. I mean, if in fact... I guess you have to say, you're right, I guess you have to say that the word Karen, in general, is a horn of an animal.
And that, if it's called a Karen, but not called a shofar,
then it's referring to a more specific type of horn. You're right, I think she's right. That you have to say that the word Karen, it does mean a horn. So, but when you get into the specifics of what kind of a horn, if we find that it's also described as a shofar, then we would know that it's... First of all, we could see it ourselves. If we take the horn off the animal, we'll see it ourselves. But I guess you're right. If it's described also as a shofar, then it implies that it's not a solid bone. But that of a paro, according to the Tanakhama, even though we see it's not a solid bone, but the pasuk describes it as that. So therefore, it has that pasulus. Okay. So this is the machlokas now between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yosei. But then, as we said before, yeah.
So a paro is considered to be a keren, but it still doesn't give a reason for why. So suddenly we've given all of these reasonings, and then no, we're just supposed to treat a paro like it's a keren. But the very next, it still doesn't give a good reason why, even if the word is interchangeable, and like we're supposed to treat it like a keren, why we are supposed to treat it like a keren.
Why we are?
Yeah. At the end of the day, that doesn't...
Well, we don't know why. It's just that that's what the Pasuk in the Torah did. Because it only called... According to the Tanakhama, the horn of a parah is only described as a keren. It's not being described by anything else.
Even though it's not a keren.
Even though it's not a solid bone, but by describing it as such, Tanakhama deduced from that, the Torah must be trying to tell us that we're supposed to treat it as though it were a solid bone. We're to passel it like it were a solid bone. Even though we know, I mean, we have a par, you take a paro, we see the horn is not solid bone. So then why does the Torah only describe it as a keren? If in Metzius it's not really a solid bone, it must be because the Torah, for whatever reason, is telling us to treat it like a keren. Right, but that's the reason. Now, if you're asking me why does the Torah treat it like a keren, you don't know. That's not the issue that in the beginning of the Gemara deals with. Okay. Then the Gemara comes up with, as we said before, more reasons as to why the horn of a para is pasul. And these were actually, the first reason especially was really quite interesting. Nu, can someone explain it? What was the reason the Gemara gave? I just want to get to know everybody's name. Okay. Naomi, you want to tell, what reason did the Gemara, let's say, take Ula? Yeah. En kategar nasa saneg, and of course, why would a para be a kategar? Yeah. An eagle. You know, we're such urban people. I don't know if I saw an eagle, I saw a para, I saw a shore. I don't know if I know the difference one from another. But an eagle, of course, is a calf, which is a para. So the reason why I can't use a horn from a para has nothing to do with the name, because it's called keren. I mean, that's a different reason. But what Ula is saying is, the main reason, or an important reason, is because it reminds us of the Chet HaEgel. Then Kateger Nasa Saneger. A totally different... Now, the Gemara challenges that, because if that were the case, we have a lot of things that we do where one could see it as a reminder to the Chet HaEgel, and that doesn't stop us from using it, from doing it. And the Gemara comes up with the Dam HaPar. What are they referring to by Dam Par? I'm sorry? Korbanos, yeah. So I'm especially, what, do you know of any Korban in particular? That was very...
Is it the blood that you sprinkle on them?
I can't hear you. That's right. There was the Parshal Kohen Gadol. And the Dam actually was brought in. Not only was it... Where did they bring the Dam of the Par? But how far into the Beis HaMikdash? Which particular area of the Beis HaMikdash did they bring it in? Who knows? Fran, do you know? Anybody know? What?
She knows.
Okay, speak up. Tell me your name first.
Ahuva.
Ahuva. Okay, Ahuva. What is... But the parochas, where were they standing when they did that? So, but they were standing in the Heichal. But they were actually, they even went into the Kodesh Kodashim and they sprinkled it in the direction of what? The Aron, you know, of the Kaparas, where the Kruvim, not to land on it, but just they stood away from it and they just sprinkled it in that direction, it fell to the ground. So actually, the Dam of the Par was brought into the Kodesh Kodashim. It was then done again in the Heichal, you know, by the Heichal, where you had the Mizbeach HaZahav, and you had the Shulchan, the Menorah, that's called the Heichal. And then, of course, just to know where every part is, where was the Mizbeach HaNechoshes? That was in the Chatzah or the Azara, right? It was like a courtyard. So the Dam HaPar, which Par is a reminder of the Egel Azov, and they brought it into the Kodesh Kodashim. So my goodness, I mean, here, well, what about Enka Tegar Nasa Sanegar? So what did the Gemara say? Kevin Dishtani Ishtani, what does that mean? Ahuva, what does that mean?
Does it have the same form, so you wouldn't necessarily think of it?
Yeah, it's not the form of the Par, it's just blood. Blood is blood, all blood looks the same. So it's not, it doesn't represent a para anymore because it's not in its original form in the sense of an animal. But then the Gemara keeps going and says, well, what about the Oron, the Kapores, the Kruvim? What about that? Yeah, they were made out of gold. Well, that certainly should be a reminder of the Egel Hazav. It's gold. And how come we have no problem about what? About, you know, and where was the Aron? In the Kodesh Kodashim. So what did the Gemara answer? So what was the lashon of the Gemara? Chote bal yakriv kamrinan. Alyssa, where's Alyssa? I just want to, you don't mind if I, it doesn't mean anything. It's just for me to get to know everybody. What does that mean? Chote bal, where is that?
Yeah.
Yakriv. What do more mean by that? Chote.
Where is that?
Remember the Gemara asked the question of v'ha'ika oron v'kaporis ukruv. It's like right in the middle of the Amud.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Did anybody get what that meant? Joyce, where's Joyce? Sorry, just, okay.
Okay, we think that it meant that the Chota themselves isn't, when we say in Kazakar Nasa Sanagar, we're referring, I did it totally wrong.
Yeah, go ahead, say it.
Okay. we're referring to, like a defendant, we're referring to a defendant themselves who's standing against Hashem. But okay, in this situation of the paroche,
not the paroches, but
the
Aron.
Of the Aron, sorry.
Yeah.
That's not the sinner themselves who's giving it, and therefore that we're not concerned with that.
Okay. Just but a drop. It says chote bal. What does bal yakriv mean? You have the right. Yakriv means to what?
To bring it in.
So it does it necessarily mean that we're talking about the person? Well, I guess you could say we are, but knows the person cannot bring something in, like into the avoda, whereby by doing this, what's happening? He's bringing in something which is a kategor. Now the Aron, nobody brings in the Aron. The Aron is stationary, sits there. That's its place. Nobody, the Chote, is not bringing it in. It's not like every time the Kohen Gadol enters the Kodesh Kodashim, he carries the Aron with him and brings it in. That's not, right? So therefore, the Gemara is saying that there's a difference. I guess you have to have that sensitivity, that there's a difference between something that is just a piece of, in a sense, furniture, that's its place, as opposed to the sinner, the person who's actually bringing it in, which leads the Gemara to the next question of, what about the utensils? The kaf and the machta, like the, right? You know what these are? So like the spoon, the machta is like a censer, which means, which they used to put the hot coals on when they would burn incense. They would pour the incense on the hot coals. And this especially on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol actually carried that in with him. So here, and what was it made out of? These gold. So here you have a person bringing in something which clearly is a zecher to the Egel Azov. And why shouldn't we say Ein Kategor Nasa Senegor? Why do we allow it? So what did the Gemara answer? So what did Gemara answer to that? So Tamar, what did Gemara, where's Tamar? What did Gemara answer to that? Yeah. How did you understand that?
Rashi said
yeah.
It's kind of just like that literally means like decoration.
If it is a decoration, then what? Then it is puzzle or it's not puzzle?
Then it's not.
Or if it's a decoration, then it's not? Because the Lashon of Gemara is Chotei Bal Yisna'a. What is it that we don't want? When do we apply Ein Kategor Nasa Senegor? When you're using it to beautify, to decorate, to make it look na'at, to make it look nice. You're trying to beautify something. So the point is this. A kaf and a machto, that spoon, it's not their purpose in the Beis HaMikdash was not to beautify anything. It was purely functional to bring in what? The incense and to burn it on the coals. Now the fact that it's made out of gold, yeah, it is made out of gold. But its purpose is purely utilitarian. Yeah?
And then why is that logic for a shofar?
So that you had to think about yourself then. So what about it? Actually, I didn't assign it to you, but if you, just right now, look at Tosfos. It's a one-sentence Tosfos. See the Tosfos, Chotei Bal Yisna'a Kamrinan. See what Tosfos says. Okay. Ariella, what you see? Want to read the Tosfos, Ariella?
Sure.
Yeah. So what is Tosfos saying? That there is something of pleasure, something. It's musical. I guess you can think of something musical as something that beautifies, that enhances. Yeah, which is true. You know, think of a wedding with music, and think of a wedding without it. So it makes a big difference. So, therefore, the sounds, musical sounds, do enhance in a beautifying way. So that's why there's still a problem of using a shofar because it's a kategor. And the Gemara keeps going. Aye, what's the next kasha the Gemara asks? So two things. Number one, it's only if you bring it in. Number two, it's got to be something which its purpose is somehow to beautify, enhance, right? And now the Gemara, which leads us to the Gemara's last question, which is yes?
But it doesn't go b'fni.
No, you'd give me a teretz already. What's the kasha, though? Big Day Zahav. So you have to know this. What Big Day Zahav? What is that talking about? This was the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. When did he wear them? The Kohen Gadol wore them all year long. Now, did he also wear them on Yom HaKippurim? Yes, but with one big exception. You said it, somebody said it, that as long as he does not go into the Kodesh Kodoshim. But if he's in the Heichal, in the Azara, if he had to do anything in the Heichal or the Azara only, he wore his Big Day Zav. Does anybody know how many articles of clothing there were? 8. They're all made out of gold. Now that clearly is to beautify. That clearly is to enhance. And he's walking in with it. So it seems to be a situation of Yakriv. It's a situation of Yisna'eh, where it's to beautify. And we don't, and the Torah tells us that that's what he's supposed to do. What about En Kateger Nasa Sanegar? So what did the Gemara answer? An amazing answer, which, if you think about it, it makes, well, you tell me. What did the Gemara answer? What? Yeah, the Gemara answered, well, the big day Zohav, he would only wear that only when he's in the Beis HaMikdash, except for the room, except for the place of the Kodesh Kodashim. But if he's in the Heichal, in the Azara, let's say if he's coming to light the menorah, he wore his big day Zohav. If he came to, you know, if he had to do something on the Mizbeach HaZov, which was in the Heichal, he wore his big day Zohav. That's okay. We're not so worried about Kategor. So asks the Gemara what? So a shofar? Where do you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Well, you go into the Kodesh Kodashim? Of course not. You don't even go into the Beis HaMikdash. We sit here in New York and blow shofar, right? So, if a Kohen Gadol could wear the big day Zav in the Heichal of all places, we can't blow a shofar in New York City? If it's what? If it's from a para? So what did the Gemara answer? And the answer, which the question, you don't know, I mean, the words are not hard, but the question is how to interpret it. Yes, what did the Gemara answer? Yeah. Yeah, an amazing answer, which for now, I mean, just the saying is, Kevin de la Zikaron, what's Zikaron? Where does Zikaron mean? To remember, right? Well, who's remembering what? What do you mean? Kevin, did Rashi comment at all? I mean, he didn't say, where is this Zikaron coming from? I'm sorry? Yeah, but it doesn't say where. How does anybody know that the shofar is coming, Lizikaron? Where's that from? Which pasuk? Which pasuk? What? Yeah. It says in Zichron Trua, that's the, I believe that's the. Who knows in the Torah, where do you find Rosh Hashanah mentioned in Chumash? You see, why do I ask that? Because you're not always going to find it, because it's not one of the Shalosh Regolim. Now, we know that there are places in the Torah where it gives you the Shalosh Regolim, but only the Shalosh Regolim. So in those places, in Chumash, you're not going to find Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur mentioned, because that's not... So where do you find... So there's one place in the Torah that has all five. Five, what I mean by that is Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and then the Shalosh Regolim are all mentioned. What parsha is that? This you should know. These are very... What? Well, Pinchas, you have it, but Pinchas, the purpose there was for what? For the... Which korban is... For Musaf. But even before you get to you there, you're right. But where's the first time in the Torah that we're introduced to these five Yamim Tovim? What parsha is... Pinchas is not the first time we hear about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Talk about Rosh Emor. Of course it's Emor. So it's in Parshas Emor. So if you take a look in Parshas Emor, when the Torah describes Rosh Hashanah, actually this is very, I mean, it is an interesting thing by itself that Rosh Hashanah, the Torah doesn't say much about Rosh Hashanah. All it says is that it gives you the date, B'chodesh HaShvi, B'echad L'chodesh, Zichron Trua, Mikra Kodesh, something like that. I'm sorry? Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Kom Lach Zavodah Lo Sasu, and that's it. The only description that singles it out from the other holidays is the fact that it's called the Zichron Trua. So the word Zichron, somehow there's remembrance. Of course, who's remembering who?
Remembering us.
Well, hopefully God is remembering us. And apparently the way we want God to remember us is through the trua, which is the sound that we make with the shofar. So Zichron Trua is that we want there to be remembrance through the Trua. Isn't that right? Okay. Now we want God to remember us. I guess, of course, we mean in a compassionate, positive way, of course. So because we want God to remember us, therefore what? It follows from that therefore a shofar, it's like what? The Gemara compares it to what? Kibifnim dummy. Is it considered kibifnim? I don't know. That's kind of hard. Do you understand it? You mean to say, because God wants us to remember, it's more chashuv than the Kohen Gadol working in the Heichal with his big deizav. So there's actually something very nice to be said. I don't want to say it yet. Maybe you'll be able to figure it out on your own, but we need the next sugya. Sure.
So just to clarify, like the Hagdara of when Inka Tigger Nasa Sanigar applies, so when we said that it has to be something you're mentioned at Eved, is that like in using it in your Avoda or whatever you're doing, like your mitzvah process, you're using to enhance the process you're doing? For example, like wearing big data while trying to ask for Kapara?
Yeah.
So Since the sound is what we're supposed to be doing, we're supposed to be blowing the shofar.
Yeah,
it's
and we're supposed
to the act itself. It's not something that we're adding onto the process to make it nicer.
Okay, but why should that matter?
I don't know. I'm just trying.
I mean, you're right. I mean, you can say that we're supposed to actually make the sound. The Kohen Gadol is not just supposed to wear big day zav. He's supposed to go do avoda with the big day zav on. Okay, you're right. But why should that detract from it?
Functional, not because it's...
Yeah, but its functionality is to do something which is also beautifying.
Okay.
A kafen, a machta, there's nothing beautifying about it. You just have to have a way to carry in the coals and to carry in the incense. So we use these things. There's nothing...
I guess because I understood, like, kafir nasa sanigar, as we're bringing something into this process of just supposed to be essence of chuba or whatever... But really, it's something that's going to work against us, right? So you're saying, like, we're bringing in.
We're taking a show.
Which makes our process nice or whatever, but really, that's something that just works against us.
Because it's a kategor.
Here, we're taking a show.
A horn of a para. We're bringing it in, we're taking it with us, and it's to beautify, we're trying to enhance, because we're trying to make these musical sounds, that's what Tosva says. And it's a kategor. Yeah.
Can you say about the Zikron Dami that kategor is a function of, like, closeness to God? So, like, if, like, going into a position with Hashem is, like, I guess the most, like geographically closest place to God, and blowing a shofar is, like, basically calling attention to yourself so that, like, God will look at you and think of you, those type of cases you wouldn't want to.
But why should it be that blowing a shofar, which obviously is some type, it's a mitzvah, you can call it an avoda of sorts, why should that be more chashuv in the sense of kategor, not in kategor nasa sanegor, than the Kohen Gadol wearing his big day zahav in the heichal? He's also doing an avoda to Hashem. Well, isn't he? I don't know.
I guess the Zikron Dami seems like, look at me, like, remember me.
Okay, you're on the right track, but you have to, this little more that has to, you're right, you're close, but you have to say a little bit more, yeah?
Is it, like, I think that maybe the reason why, if it's separation, it's okay, is because it's not the essence itself, it's not the action itself. And the Kohen Gadol, that's exactly the point. He's wearing his big day zahav only in the Eichal, but he won't enter the Kodesh Kodashim because that's the essence, and that is the action itself. And he's not doing that with his big day sab, so it's okay. But when we're blowing a shofar, that call that's going up to Shemayim is the essence itself, and therefore you could equate that with, like, being in the Kodesh Kodashim. It would be the same as if the Kohen Gadol would be in the Kodesh Kodashim.
Okay, but I think we still need more. I hear you, right? But it's, to me, if you would have asked, my instinctive reaction is, but it's just, you know, Why is it any different than lulav and esrog? I mean, okay, it doesn't come from with any. It's a mitzvah. So why should? What is so important about this mitzvah of shofar? Okay, it says lezikaron. I mean, you could argue that everything we do is we want God to remember us favorably. I mean, you can construe, you know, in a very general way. There's a little bit more. You're on the right. We just need a little more better language. Yeah.
Essence of Rosh Hashanah is a shofar.
Okay. And what does that mean when you describe it as an essence? What does essence mean? See, it's kind of vague, the word essence. I don't know what you mean by it. You say it's important? Okay, it's important. I don't deny it's important. I mean, it's the essence. What is its essential feature? Yes. I know that. So was Lulav and Esrog, the mitzvah Hayom for Sukkot. So what makes it so special? You know, wait. I'm gonna ask you this later on too. But we'll have something really to work with later on that will help us for this. So let's just keep going. Then the Gemara comes up. So that was all. This was Ula, and then you have Abaye coming up with a pardon?
Yeah.
Do we order something? Thank you. Okay. So Tova, where's Tova? Okay, Tova. So what was the next reason?
The shofar of the car has a lot of different branches on it, and the shofar's just kind of...
Yeah, the idea, but not... layers, yeah. Apparently the way it grows on the animal, it grows in layers, like... I guess like a tree gets, you know, gets thicker and thicker, like this one, and then another layer grows over it, and until it, and that's how it gains its thickness. It's one layer over another layer. Okay? I mean, I don't know how other horns of animals grow. Okay. So, therefore what? So it grows that way. What's the big deal? So, therefore... It's an amazing thing that Abaye, this is the view of the Chachamim, that since the way it grows, one layer on top of another, it's as if you have several shofros combined. That reason sounds so weak to me. I'd rather stick with the Karen reason. But and what did Rabbi Yosef respond back?
That because the layers are connected, because if it's one shofar.
Yeah, I mean, okay, maybe it grows that way, but it's all connected. It's not like you have one shofar pushed inside another one. I mean, it grows that way, but then it's all combined into one unit, so... It's like the bark of a tree. You can peel off. You can see one, but it's one unit. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yosef says that this is not a problem of that it's like two or three shofros. So first of all, something else is very interesting, that the Gemara somehow comes up with its own drasha. What drasha do I mean?
Shofar.
Yeah, I mean, it says shofar echad omar rachmana. V'lo shnayim u'shlosha shofros. First of all, where does it say, I'm asking, where does it say shofar? The shofar echad omar rachmana. The Torah says one shofar. So we didn't learn this yet, but I don't know if maybe someone knows it. Actually, by Rosh Hashanah, does the Torah mention at all?
It's by Yovel.
Yeah. In Rosh Hashanah, we have no idea what instrument we're supposed to use, because all it says is Zichron Trua. It doesn't tell you what instrument do you use to make. The Trua is a sound. So actually, the Gemara, it's later on, it's in the fourth parak that the Gemara learns that we derive that the instrument to be used is a shofar.
Rashi said it here.
Oh, Rashi mentioned it. Okay, what? Yeah, you're right. Rashi mentioned it. I forgot. So actually, it's derived from Yovel. The Yovel year, the Torah says that on Yom Kippur of the Yovel year, we're supposed to blow sounds from a horn of an animal, and there the Torah says specifically a shofar. And the Gemara learns out that what's true, but this is only Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. This is not like we blow shofar at the end of every Yom Kippur. That's a minhag. The Torah is talking about, of course we don't do it because we don't observe Yovel today, but according to the Torah, you're supposed to blow the shofar every 50th year in the Yovel year, but which day? The day of Yom Kippur. So, and the Gemara learns out Rosh Hashanah from Yom Kippur, but Rosh Hashanah of every year from Yom Kippur, and therefore that's how we know that it's a shofar. So the fact that it says Vavarta shofar, so it doesn't say shofros, there's no such Mishnah or Brisa that says such a drasha. So it's interesting that the Amorayim are being Dorish this. The Torah says shofar. So it's got to be one unit, one piece, one instrument. But you can't have a combination of shofros to make the sound. And the Tanakhama thinks that the horn of a para is like a combination of shofros, because the way it grows, it's one layer. So you have to think of it, the first layer, it's very thin. Then you have another layer. Think of that as a separate shofar. And then another layer. Think of that as another shofar. As though each shofar is very, very thin. So you have multiple shofros. So Abai says, well, the Torah didn't say to use multiple shofros. Actually, this is not... Do we find anywhere where... is there any place in the Torah where we're supposed to make sounds and we use multiple instruments? Yeah, chatzotzros. And there, if you look it up, who knows, just you should look it up yourself. Where in the Chumash, where's the Torah? In Bahalosha, correct, you'll see. It talks about using two chatzotzros, a couple. So there it says, yeah, you don't just blow one, you blow, okay, you know. So the point here, what Abai is saying is that the fact that it says Vavarta Shofar, that he understands that to mean that it's got to be one, but not a multiple of shofros making the sound. Okay? And Rabbi Yossi agrees with that, according to the way Abai learns. He just feels that since it's all connected, it's not multiple. It's one shofar, even though it grows one layer on top of another. Yeah.
So I know you weren't happy with the word essence, but I think that it may seem strange that suddenly you're throwing in these mediocre seeming reasons for, oh, it can't be layers, oh, but it's not considered layers. But I think that goes back to this idea of essence, which I think that all of these reasons really are touching upon and just not saying straight out. It, to me, it just seems almost implied that this is the call, that the actual, I don't know what, but like this is the actual thing that's being sent up to Shemayim.
What are you trying to explain? Again, the Kateger Nasa Senegar?
This whole underlying idea of what the shofar is and what it's symbolizing, I think, is what the Ein Kategor Natzes Anegor is trying to say, what this layer idea is trying to say. And they're all hitting upon the fact that, like,
this is the essence.
Oh, I agree with you. It's that this is the thing that we have to do on Rosh Hashanah. We have to take this shofar and we have to make certain sounds that should be Olah L'Shamayim. I agree with you 1,000%. The only question is, why does it follow from that, that even though we're blowing shofar 10,000 miles away from Yerushalayim, that the problem of Ein Kateger Nasa Saneger still exists when, you know, just going back to the big day Zav of the Kohen Gadol, he's in Yerushalayim, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Heichal, and it doesn't concern us?
Because that's not what the essence is.
But why does it follow that it's, since it's the essence, that therefore, you know, it has this, what gives it? Okay, it's the essence because we're supposed to do it, because the Torah says to do this. But how does it follow from that, that therefore, the Gemara compared it to like the Kohen Gadol entering the Kodesh Kodoshim? What gives it that special status? I agree, it's
the call that's entering up into Hashem's, like...
Okay. You're right, but it needs a little bit more. I'm not saying you're wrong, it's just that there's something still missing. Okay. Now so nobody got further in the Gemara, right? Yeah, I know the Rabban. Okay, so... now we've already discussed quite a bit of what the Ramban said. Now in the first two paragraphs of the Ramban, what is he basically explain in the first two paragraphs? Yeah, what does he basically explain? Okay, Ahuva, what does he basically explain?
We need to have another reason.
Yeah, and basically, we said it already before, right? So, did anybody have any difficulty reading it? Were there any lines or whatever that you didn't understand quite what it meant? Okay. Okay, and then, in the third paragraph, that's where the kasha that he asks in the third paragraph, this is what sort of... made him realize something that we talked about this before. He asked the kasha about the horn of a re'em. Right?
What's a re'em?
Yeah, what's a re'em? I was just going to ask the same question. What's a re'em? If you look it up in the dictionary, it said a wild ox. Now, I don't know a wild ox from a giraffe, but okay, but so a wild ox, because a shor is an ox. So this is not, isn't a shor an ox? We say shor. So I don't, what is a wild ox? I don't know what it, but the point, it's a chaya. It's a wild animal. It's not a domesticated animal. And how does the Torah describe it? It says, v'karnei re'em karnav. Karnei re'em. Now what about it? Yeah, I mean, we could even ask the question, should a re'em, is the horn of a re'em kosher or pasul? Well, so, I mean, the Mishnah says, kol hashofros ksherim chutz mishel para. So the problem is, what do you mean chutz mishel para? Why only para? What about a re'em? Why re'em should have been on the exclusion list. Why only chutz mishel para? Should have said chutz mishel para v'shel re'em. Why shel re'em? Because in the Torah we don't find it ever what? It's not called a shofar anywhere, it's only called a keren. So the first teretz that he gives, which is not, you know, a very simple answer, is what?
That was more common.
Yeah, in other words, you're right, the Mishnah should have mentioned it too. But a re'eim is not so common. The reason why it's not so common, because it's a chaya. It's not so easy to go catch a chaya. You know, a parah is domesticated, so people had those animals. So therefore, it was much more common. A re'eim was not such an animal that people had access to, because it was hard to trap them. So the Mishnah should have said, chutz mishal parah vishal re'eim, but the Mishnah only mentioned those animals which were more common. But then the Ramban comes up with a different teretz, and that's what we talked about before, that why didn't the Mishnah mention it? So what does he say? Why didn't the Mishnah mention it? So, Naomi, why didn't the Mishnah mention it? Oh, you didn't get that far. Aviva, why didn't the Mishnah mention it?
Because it wasn't a hava mina, that would be okay, because it's obviously not a shofar, because a shofar is a keren, it's a physical thing.
Yeah, what we said before, that what? That
physically, you can tell that it's not a shofar.
By what? Because of what?
Because it's not a shell around the...
That's right. That the lashon of the Mishnah was, call hashofros ksherim chus mishal parah. What does shofros mean? To the Ramban, shofros is a term to describe what kind of horns? Hollow. They might have a bone inside, but it's a hollow shell. So of all the horns that are hollow, they're all kosher, says the Mishnah, except for one, a parah. What about a re'eim? A re'eim, of course, is puzzle. But you don't need the Mishnah. It's puzzle because it's not a hollow, it's not a shell. It's just a solid bone. So that the Mishnah doesn't have to mention, because that's not in the parsha of the kind of horns that we're talking about. So that's why the Torah didn't have to, that's why the Mishnah didn't have to mention it. And it's in this paragraph that he pointed out, you see where he says the last four or five lines at the end of the line, V'hode katani mipnei shehu keren, v'lo katani shenikra keren. I mentioned this earlier. What is he asking here? That the horn of a parah, what reason is did the Chachamim give, the Tanakhama give in the Mishnah, mipnei shehu keren? So Ramban says the language is not really precise. Mipnei shehu keren to the Ramban sounds like it's saying that it's a solid piece of bone. But that's not true. What's not true? It's not true that the horn of a parah is a solid bone. So what did the Ramban, so the language, it should have said what? Mipnei shehu nikra keren. That's what it should have said. So how does the Ramban respond? Mishum dekeven dekeren ikre shofar lo ikre kekeren gomer hu velo shofar have. You understand? So it's of course it's not a keren, but since the Torah only describes it how? With the word keren, so that's what the Ramban is saying, that therefore, for whatever reason, the Torah is telling us, the Mishnah is teaching us, that since it's always described, only described as a keren and nothing else, that we are to treat it like a keren. It's as though it's a keren. When I say it, so it's as though it's a solid bone, even though it's not. But we're to treat it as such. Isn't that right? Now, did you understand? Let's see, he mentions. He talked about a Ya'el. Did you know what that? Yeah, well, yeah. Do you know where did the Ramban come up with that? What is that? It's the next Mishnah. You just, I know you didn't start it yet, but just turn to Chavav on the base. The opening sentence of the next Mishnah, Shofar shall Rosh Hashanah shall Ya'el Pashut. Now a Ya'el, Rashi says, we'll see there's a Machlokas Rishon on what a Ya'el is, but let's just work with Rashi. Now Rashi tells it to you in old French, Steinbuch, you see, it's a chaya. It's an undomesticated animal. And the Mishnah says that the shofar of Rosh Hashanah, you know what pashut means?
Straight.
Straight. Like the pashut means simple. It's straight and it's not what? Curved, right? So the question is, a Ya'el, where do we find in the Torah or anywhere in Tanakh, do we find that a Ya'el is called what? Is a shofar called, is a Ya'el called a shofar anywhere? No. Is it called a Karen anywhere? No. Not called anything. So the question is, what do you make of it if it's not called anything? On the one hand, you can say, well, if it's not called anything, maybe we should treat it like a Karen. Or you could say, if it's not called anything, maybe we should treat it like a shofar. To me, it's a toss-up. How do you know how to treat it? And the Mishnah says you could use a shofar. It says, he tells you, a shofar, shal Rosh Hashanah, shal Ya'el Pashut. So what's the answer now, according to the Ramban? You understand now the answer? Yeah, what's the answer? Yeah, because it's hollow. It grows like a shofar grows. So there's no, and so what reason could you have to passel it? If the Torah would have called it a Karen, then that's a reason to passel it. But what makes it kosher is the fact that it's hollow. So there's no problem. We don't need to find in Tanakh somewhere that the word that a Ya'el is described as a shofar. What makes it a shofar is the fact that its construction, the fact that it's a hollow horn. Now, if the Torah would have described it somewhere as a Karen, then we would have had to passel it like we passel a para. But it's not. So there's no reason to passel it. That's why it's kosher. See, until now, if we didn't have this, it sounds to us that it's just semantics. Is the word shofar used? Is the word Karen used? Like, what's the big deal? I mean, we don't even understand why it should matter what the name is. But it's not a question of a name, per se. It's a question of the structure of the instrument. And the kind of structure that we need is one that's hollow, as opposed to a solid bone. So those that are solid bones, of course they're possible, you don't have to mention that. Those that are hollow, of course, should be kosher. Except for what? Except for one, the para, because the Torah always refers to it as Karen. We got it? Okay. What else does the Ramban? And then, the last paragraph. Now here, it might have been hard to, he's referring to a Gemara later on. I don't know if anybody. That's what I don't like about the Bar Ilan. They don't give you, you know, there's an edited edition and they would give you, you know, their footnotes. They tell you where to find it. So he says, the Raya Leperushenu. He said, a Raya for what? A proof of what I just said. What did I just say? About the difference between if it's a solid bone versus a hollow shell? V'rayel peirushenu mimasha amru kadcho bezachruso yotza ma'od the same amim b'mino chotzeitz kamash malon. This is a Gemara later on. Do you understand what that meant? You know, katcha bezachruso. Pierce what?
The torn part.
But are you talking about a paro? What are you talking about? Which horn?
A shofar.
Yeah. So what did you do? Instead of doing what? What did you do? Yeah. What if instead of... It's a shofar. It's hollow with a bone through it. Now, ordinarily, what did they do? They took out the bone. So the Gemara raises the issue, what if you don't take out the bone, you leave it in, but you just bore a hole through the bone? What's the halacha? So the Gemara says, yotza, you're yotze. Mao desema min bemino chotzeitz, kamash malon. The havamina was that maybe it should be puzzle. What's the havamina to make it puzzle? What is the Ramban saying? Because maybe, what do you mean by min bemino chotzeitz? You understand that? What does that mean? Yeah?
You're supposed to be on the shofar, so if you have some other material that's dividing between your blow and the shofar, then the chatitza, and you can't be yotzei with blowing the shofar.
Yeah, in other words, the bone shouldn't really be there. You're supposed to really remove it. Now, the bone, the material, the matter that the bone is made out of course, is the same material, the same matter that the shell is made. It's all the same, made out of the same min, right? The only thing is, though, the hollowed bone, so think of the bone, right, that has a hole in it. That bone really, the sound, when you make the sound, what should the sound be passing through normally, ordinarily? The outer shell, the sound should be passing through. Now, of course, ordinarily it would if you removed the bone. But here, what's happening is you don't remove the bone, so the sound is passing through what? Think of the sound, it's not hitting the outer shell. Think of the sounds as, right? It's not bouncing off the outer shell from the inside. What is it bouncing off?
The bone.
The inside of the bone. So therefore, what is separating from what? So the outer part of the bone is a chatzitza, you follow? Between the sounds and the outer shell, isn't it? So maybe you would think that therefore it should pasa because it's a chatzitza, even though it's what?
Mimbamino.
Kamash Malana comes to teach us that we do not view it as a chatzitza to pasa. That's what the Gemara later on says. It's not a chatzitza. Or that chatzitza doesn't pasul. Now, what does the Ramban see? Now, this piece, this is a Gemara. I'll show you where it is. It's a Gemara on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Beis. I'll just show you where it is, and you could look it over for tomorrow. Do you see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7 lines from the bottom? It says, Omer Ravashi, Shekotcho bezachruso, ma'o desema min b'min ochotzeitz kamash malan. That's the Gemara that the Ramban is referring to. You see it? Okay, so what about this? So the Ramban says, Alma ein hechsher hatkia bezachrus ela be'elyono shel keren shu hashofer ela she'en hazachrus chotzeitz bo. Right, what does that mean? You see that really, what instrument are you being yotze? When you do this, do what? Don't remove the bone, but you just bore a hole through the bone. With what instrument are you being yotzei the mitzvah? Is it the bone or is it the shell? The shell. How do I know? Maybe it's the bone. What?
Then it wouldn't be allowed.
How do you know? You're being circular now. He's trying to prove all this.
Well, then the other people who don't bore the hole wouldn't be
No, no, no. Just look at the Gemara that he quoted. Just that Gemara. So, yeah. In other words, what was the havamin of the Gemara as to why maybe it should be puzzle? Because maybe it's a chatzitza. What do you mean a chatzitza? Between what and what?
The thing you're supposed to be.
Well, say the sounds. Now, what is a chatzitza? The bone is a chatzitza between the sounds that you're producing and what? And the outer shell. So who cares about the outer shell? Apparently, that's exactly what we do want. The sound has to pass through the outer shell. So you might think that it's not because something is interfering with it. What's interfering with it?
The bone.
Kamash malan, that we're not concerned, that even though there's a bone there, we're going to ignore it. It doesn't represent a chatzitza to pasel. But what does the Gemara show you? That what makes it kosher is not the fact that you're blowing sounds through a bone, is that basically we're viewing it that you're blowing sounds through the hollow shell of the shofar. You'll tell me, but there's a bone, you know, it doesn't bother us. So what does the Ramban prove from this? That if I just took out the bone and bore a hole through the bone and just blew the bone? What's the halacha? Pasul. See how the Ramban knows it? Because if it were kosher, then why talk about a chatzitza? What's the problem? If you can be yotze with the bone, you follow what I'm saying? Then just say you're blowing through the bone, and the bone is a kosher instrument. Kamash malon that it's not. All right, we have to stop. So for tomorrow, what I want you go over this Ramban, the ending. I want to finish up what he's saying in this last paragraph, and then go on. So in your Mara Makomos, work on Dalet and Hay, and try to get to Vav if you can. Okay? Dalet, Hay, and Vav. Try to work on that. Okay?